Case 21-4129, Patrick Brooks et al. Versus Butler County, Ohio et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes for plaintiffs and 15 minutes to be shared by defendants and intervener, with counsel Mr. Ryan Spitzer participating by video. Ms. Kinsley, you may proceed for the appellant when ready.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Kinsley, and I represent the appellants. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court and counsel, the district court erred in denying the resident's preliminary injunction motion in this case in two critical respects. First, it improperly answered the question as to whether there exists a constitutionalized property right under state law to be protected by the 14th Amendment procedural due process clause by looking to the procedural rather than the substantive dimensions of Ohio property law. And second, it erroneously relied upon a line of cases from this court holding that applicants for a variance have no constitutionalized property right when they seek a discretionary benefit from the government. In this case, the residents were not seeking to engage government discretion for their benefit. Rather, they asserted their own existing property use and enjoyment rights, which Ohio calls among the most revered and sacrosanct in its legal tradition.
Well, you do explain to me, it's a preliminary question, and apparently one that is pending before the district court, but ordinarily one that really needs to come first in the litigation. Can you explain to me how your clients have standing here?
Yes, Your Honor. Our clients have standing in two ways. We represent two groups of clients. Some of them are directly adjacent property owners to the Dollar General store. And under Ohio law, they are entitled to a specific set of procedural rights that are hallmarks of the substantive property rights that underlie those procedures. They are entitled under Ohio law to notice and a hearing, and they're given an opportunity to appeal any variances that are granted.
Just one quick question, but there's not a dispute that they received the notice, correct?
There's no dispute that they received the notice. That's okay. Right.
But they did not, at the point at which the variance was being considered, they weren't a part of the proceedings at all, right?
They were not in attendance at the hearing
Were they in any formal way involved?
At that hearing? No. But their rights were definitely at stake, because their property rights are directly impacted by the location of a commercial store immediately adjacent to their homes in such a way that varies from the protections that exist under Ohio law to ensure that they can continue with the use and quiet enjoyment of their property.
What is the law on which you rely? Is it this, I think, Shoemaker, is that the correct pronunciation, and Willoughby Hills, are those the cases that you rely on?
Those are two of the cases, Your Honor, yes.
But those are zoning cases.
Those are
and
zoning
cases. Isn't that, this property was always zoned commercial, right?
It was always zoned commercial.
And so there was not a change of zoning, which is a different matter from a variance being granted. I mean, clearly so, someone could have done commercial building on that site before any of this occurred, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Let me address the nuance to your question.
Thank you.
The zoning code actually contains the restrictions that Dollar General sought a variance from. When Dollar General sought to locate on this property, it admittedly could engage in a commercial use of right. But the zoning code restricted the operation of that commercial use by placing certain requirements on it, certain number of parking spots, certain setbacks, certain buffering requirements, important to this case, certain landscaping requirements that would buffer that commercial use from the immediately adjacent residential homeowners. All of that is part of the zoning code and a condition of the exercise of this particular use.
So what's the normative remedy if someone is trying to engage in a request for variance?
The normative remedy for the applicant is to seek the discretion of the zoning board.
And what is the protection of the person who owns property near?
To oppose.
To oppose that administrative hearing, right?
Right. To seek the protection of the existing zoning code.
Right. And that was not done here. Is that correct?
The government did not provide a process, a fair process, by which that those rights could be considered.
Well, then your position is that the government in Ohio, in this area, has never provided that. Because a variance comes by request from a party, the adjoining neighbors are noticed, and then it's set on a docket for a Board of Zoning Appeals hearing, and then the parties who have an interest in it come, and the commercial entity says, I want to do this, and the homeowners say, we don't want you to do that, and then the zoning board decides, right?
Right.
So that was the remedy, and your position is that remedy did not provide to your clients or anyone else procedural due process?
That remedy didn't happen in this case.
Why?
Because the zoning board hearing that took place was fatally flawed by unquestioned public corruption.
Well, but I don't think anybody disputes that it was a significant wrong to have someone on the board who has a financial interest vote. And there's no dispute about that. That's a conflict of interest. But at the time that was unknown, so you were within the procedural provisions that Ohio law allows for, and then the appropriate response in exercising your right would have been to attend that hearing and raise your objections. I mean, you could have done that, correct?
That is one thing that could have happened, but this is the problem that the district court got caught up in, and I think we're getting caught up in it again here. We are focusing on procedure rather than substance in defining the property interest. And
the grievances you have about the location of this store were the grievances you would have had to begin with, right?
We don't have any grievance about the location of the store. The store can be there of right. The problem is that these variances eliminated the prophylactic measures that protect residential homeowners when a commercial use directly abuts their land.
But you could have objected to those variances at the initial proceeding. You failed to do so, and now you still have the same set of objections that you would have had you appeared, but you have appended to that an additional grievance because you have found out that there was a conflict on the part of one of the members of the deliberative body, correct?
That's not exactly the timeline, Your Honor, and I still want to return to the substance of the right. The Supreme Court in Loudermill has said it has rejected this entire framework in focusing on procedure when looking at 14th Amendment property interests. In Loudermill, an employee was terminated, and the government attempted to say, we followed all of the procedural steps in terminating, therefore there is no protected property right at stake. The Supreme Court rejected that analytical approach to this question. The Supreme Court said substance and procedure are different dimensions of property under the 14th Amendment. And we are falling into that same trap here. The district court did as well.
What is the Supreme Court saying that about that's similar to what we have here?
We need to focus on the substance of the property right that is at stake, not the procedures that Ohio has established for asserting it.
So you're not jumping on the procedures at all here?
No. In fact, the Supreme Court has directed us to the substance. And when we look at that, when we look at the Ohio Constitution, Article 1, Section 19, it says private property ownership rights are inviolate. The Ohio Supreme Court tells us these are sacrosanct rights, the most revered in Ohio's legal tradition. Ohio protects private property rights to...
I get with this how this argument works, and I can understand that this whole thing may not rise and fall on whether they came to that administrative hearing. I understand that. But tell me the pathway that you have then to get to the substantive question. I mean, your argument must be that the mere fact that somebody sat on that board and voted with a conflict of interest enables your clients to come in and challenge under their substantive due process rights. Is that your argument?
Our argument at step one is that they have a protected property interest under Ohio law and actually under this court's decisions in EJS and Nazarovsky, which say that you as a landowner have a property right in the existing zoning regulations. That's step one. At step two, the government must give you due process.
The government gave you due process. You just didn't seek to avail yourself of it. If nearby property owners could have easily ascertained the interest of the individual who voted when he shouldn't have, I mean, all of that could have been presented at the initial hearing. So what is it that gives you, when there's been a procedure by which your rights could be fully vindicated, how do you get to avail yourself of a totally different procedure?
No one can characterize, Your Honor, the procedure that was given in which the deciding vote was casted by a man who was going to put the money in his own pocket as being a fair process.
This comes about in many different contexts. It even comes about, we hope judges don't do these sorts of things. But you come to court, you have a right to request the judge to recuse himself or herself. I mean, every procedure that you can find that's set up within that I'm aware of, you come and you raise your issues at the proper time to raise your issues. And if you don't, the fact that you might have had a right doesn't give you some unfettered out there in the stratosphere ability to raise it on your own terms. Where do you find that ability?
May I address your question, Your Honor?
Yes.
So there's evidence in the record that presenting this kind of explanation at the hearing would have been futile. Mr. Daniel, just months before this hearing, had in his separate capacity as a township trustee, voted to give his son a raise who was the road administrator in his town. His reputation was one of being a corrupt public official.
All the more reason to appear and expose him at the hearing.
Coming from a place of power, Your Honor, that may feel appropriate for us, but for people who live in quiet homes who may not have the sophistication or resources to access, they may not have known that that was available to them.
But if they had come to that hearing and exercised that right, wouldn't that then they have had a further right to challenge the decision of the Board of Zoning Appeals?
Under Ohio law, they would have. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, we will hear from, looks like we're hearing from three different attorneys, and I believe the first one we're hearing from is Mr. Spitzer, who is appearing remotely. Mr. Spitzer?
Correct, Your Honor, and I appreciate the court's accommodation in allowing me to appear remotely. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Ryan Spitzer, counsel for Appalese, the Butler County Board of Zoning Appeals, and the Butler County Board of County Commissioners. Your Honors, this court should affirm the decision of the district court, which denied appellant's motion for a preliminary injunction, at least for four reasons. And each of these reasons stem from the fact that appellants do not possess a protected property interest. The property at issue was already zoned to permit commercial use. The Board of Zoning Appeals decision was inherently discretionary. The county provided appellants with notice of the hearing, and there is no inherent due process right in decisions free of corruption or impropriety. And based off of those four factors, there's no likelihood of success. The underlying property here, Your Honor, the address is 8383 Keister Road. Prior to Dollar General's involvement in the variance request, it was already zoned B2 for commercial use. Appellant's entire argument ignores the underlying zoning of this property. So pursuant to section 16.02 of the county zoning resolution, a B2's purpose is to reserve certain land areas for community and highway-oriented retail and service establishment. This zoning expressly permits any retail and or service use such as a Dollar General. Because the property was already zoned for commercial use, the variance granted here are area variances. They're not use variances. Dollar General would have been permitted to operate the underlying retail store regardless of the variances that they requested. Basically, these area variances, they involve aesthetic issues. So it's the store parking lot, it's front yard setback requirements, it's fencing aesthetics. But the underlying use of the Dollar General in and of itself was still forbidden. Secondly, Your Honors, the decision made by the Board of Zoning Appeals was inherently discretionary. And this court has already held in EJS that a party cannot possess a property interest in the receipt of a benefit when the decision to award or withhold those benefits is wholly discretionary.
Well, your opposing counsel argues that EJS is inapposite because that was an application for a variance. And here, this is a landowner who relied on the absence of a variance. So how do you respond to that distinction?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's a great question. And I think EJS almost directly contradicts the plaintiff's assertions here, the appellant's assertions. So in EJS, and this is really the case that this court has held, that there's not a property interest in decisions free from corruption or improprieties. So EJS, and I quote, says there's no support for the proposition that a citizen has a fundamental right or liberty interest in having the government make discretionary decisions free from corruption independently from whether the citizen has a separate property or liberty interest. There's simply no underlying property or liberty interest here. It's certainly regrettable that Alan Daniel voted. I'm not sure that's going to be contested by any party. But his vote doesn't equate to a due process violation based on this court's holding in EJS. And in fact, there are other state-specific remedies and recourses for Mr. Daniel's vote, such as filing a complaint with the Ethics Commission. The plaintiffs utilized that option here. They have taken that alternative remedy. And so I think EJS is directly on point. And not only that, Your Honors, but EJS and Nazarovsky both involve the typical plaintiff, and that is a developer who had a discretionary zoning opinion not granted. Appellants here are arguing essentially that they have a property right greater than that of the developer. Had the BZA not granted the discretionary zoning opinion and not given these setback variances to DG Germantown, DG Germantown wouldn't be able to appeal, but apparently appellants still have a right greater than that.
Well, but part of their argument is that the procedures that you have recognize their property rights because you give notice to adjacent property owners and you give them the right to appear administratively and to engage in the appeal steps going from there. So does that recognition by the state not make a difference?
So I think there's kind of two questions to that, Your Honor. One is whether or not there's a property interest governed by Ohio law in terms of what process is owed. So revised code section 30315 governs the notice requirements here. It essentially says you can give at least 10 days notice in writing to the parties in interest, give notice of public hearing by publication, and allow them an opportunity to appear and respond. It's undisputed that they received these notices. It's undisputed that they didn't appear. They waited approximately 8 months and filed this due process claim, but there's simply not a protected property interest under the Sixth Circuit in these decisions that are, quote, free of corruption or free of improprieties. I think EJS speaks directly on this point. And the district court order took pretty great care to articulate the rights to which interested parties like appellants may possess a property interest. And the underlying decision, I think, is page ID 644-649. For a third-party property owner to appeal a zoning decision under Ohio's Administrative Appeals, which is 250601, the property owner must, at a minimum, have been directly affected by a board's decision and have actively participated in the administrative hearing. Adjacent or contiguous property owners who oppose and participate in the administrative proceedings concerning the issuance of a variance are entitled to seek that administrative review. They could have sought an administrative appeal had they appeared. They had notice, they didn't appear, and they waived the opportunity to have standing to then appeal that under 250601. To avoid that issue, they brought a due process claim, but there's simply no underlying due process violation here given the court's prior opinions in EJS. So in conclusion, Your Honors, the district court in this court's December 7, 2021 amended order, it got it right. Appellants are unlikely to succeed because they do not possess a protected property interest and therefore do not establish a likelihood of success on the merits of their claim. Thank you.
Ms. Weber, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, you are. Thank you. Most people don't. My name is Linda Weber. I am here. Good morning, Your Honors. I am here on behalf of Alan Daniel. As you know, we're not here to argue the merits of appellant's substantive claims, but their claims are relevant to the extent that they have to prove likelihood of being able to succeed on the merits. And one of the reasons that they will not be able to succeed on the merits is the legislative immunity Mr. Daniel can assert as a public official who was voting in a discretionary capacity. The Supreme Court in Bogan versus Scott Harris held that local legislators are absolutely immune from suit under Section 1983 for their legislative activities, and that the determination of whether an activity is legislative must be made without regard to the legislator's subjective.
Remind me, is this an appointed or an elected board?
An elected.
An elected board. Yes. So they have the remedy by voting with their feet, so to speak. They would vote against someone. Is that their only remedy, is to not reelect someone who puts his own interest first or engages in a conflict of interest on a board like this?
He could have been recalled from office. He has resigned, so he is no longer on the board.
So it's all of the typical, because it's elected, it's all of the typical elected opportunities for recourse.
Yeah, and you know what, Your Honor? I am not 100% sure. Actually, it has been a while since I've looked at that factor, whether he was elected or appointed. So I want to withdraw that. I would have to go back and look at the facts. So he may have been appointed, but at this point he has resigned from the board. And the question of his vote on this particular night is before the Ethics Commission. I think that's not a secret. So the appellants in this case have argued and relied on this court's decision from 1988 in Haskell versus Washington Township. That is a decision that predated Bogan versus Scott Harris. And at that, in the Haskell case, the court decided that the legislative immunity would not apply to officials whose actions were taken in bad faith or because of corruption, et cetera. And Bogan versus Scott.
You had 2 minutes and your time's up, and it doesn't really seem that you have a great deal
You're right, I don't. I am just adding to the, you're right, I am adding to the likelihood of success on the merits. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court, Joe Miller with the Voorhees Law Firm on behalf of intervening defendant CDDG Germantown LLC. I'd like to address three topics very quickly. God bless you. The lack of a protected property interest, which dooms this procedural due process claim. Second, I'd like to address Judge Gibbons' questions on standing, which does not exist here. And third, I'd like to address appellant's contention that somehow Judge DeLotte's well-reasoned decision upends Ohio zoning law. It does not. So as an initial matter, as you know, a motion panel of this court already determined that plaintiffs are not likely to succeed on the merits because of that lack of protected property interest. I submit to you, Judge Gibbons and Judge Stranch, this case is akin to EGS v. City of Toledo, which Judge Gibbons decided in 2012 with Judge Moore, but in this instance with less compelling circumstances and a much more attenuated claim of a vested right. In the EGS case, what was at stake was the vested right of the property owner itself, not a neighboring property owner who never showed up and is somehow asserting rights in the use of a neighboring property. You need to look to Ohio case law, Ohio law, for fundamental rights protected by procedural due process. There is no Ohio case giving a vested right to a neighboring property owner in the use or variances for a neighboring property owner. Instead, consistent with EGS, Judge Moore joined in that decision of the motion panel to deny the requested injunction because of that lack of a protected right. This panel should do likewise. Appellants focus on the process they claim they were due, notice and opportunity, and a neutral decision maker, but they completely bypass where under Ohio law a fundamental protected property right has been established. It's not EGS, it's not Nazarovsky, that involved the property owner, him or herself, at issue in that case. And so too in this case, it's my client's property that was at issue. And even still, as I believe the panel has recognized, appellants were provided adequate notice and the opportunity to be heard. For whatever reason, they declined to take advantage of it. Judge Stranch, you explained the zoning process better than I could, but even thereafter, there is the possibility of an appeal to the Court of Common Pleas under Ohio Revised Code 2506. The suggestion that it would have been futile to show up has been rejected by the Ohio Supreme Court in the Nemesis case that we've submitted to you. If they wanted to exercise their rights, they could have come that evening, even if they were turned out, which is not at all clear because they never came and presented evidence. They would have then had an appeal afterwards to the Court of Common Pleas, where they could have demonstrated potentially to a trial court that the decision was unlawful or unreasonable. And as Mr. Spitzer pointed out to you, the EGS case likewise says you can't claim a fundamental protected right in a panel or decision-making body that's free from bias or corruption. So second, I think it's important that we address questions as it relates to standing. I submit to you that appellants cannot establish Article III standing. They have not shown a concrete or particularized injury. Instead, they've expressed generalized concerns that the development could cause increased noise, that it could cause increased traffic, that they could lose quiet enjoyment. This court has found in the Ebersole case commended to you in our brief that those type of generalized concerns simply do not bestow upon a property owner Article III standing in a nearby development. Those concerns are too speculative. I would submit to you they could be addressed later on in a nuisance action in state court, an enforcement action with the township, any number of ways, but they do not create Article III standing. The appellants have talked about the Willoughby Hills case, the Schoenaker case. Those cases are completely unremarkable and have nothing to do with Article III standing before this court. Instead, they simply set forth the factors to establish standing for a neighboring or adjacent landowner to bring a 2506 appeal under the Ohio Revised Code, not your standards. Standing does not exist here. Finally, I want to stress again that the district court's decision does not in any way upend Ohio zoning law. Notice and opportunity to be heard are deeply rooted in both federal and state law, and they're unaffected by this court's, the district court's decision on the PI motion. The third-party property owners that are directly affected and actively participated in zoning decisions may still administratively appeal that decision. Again, for whatever reason, the owners in this case chose not to avail themselves of those rights. Ohio law remains unchanged in that regard. I've been fortunate to litigate land use and zoning disputes for 20-some years and have been privileged to appear before this court in several of the cases cited by both sides in their briefs. The district court's decision leaves Ohio zoning law unchanged and was correctly decided in accordance with Section 1983 zoning matters in this court. Without a vested property or liberty right, you cannot bring a due process claim. Very quickly, I would like to explain that dooms plaintiff's complaint in its entirety. Count one is a procedural due process claim under 1983. Count two is a request for injunctive relief under that same claim. Count three is asking for a declaratory judgment that due process has been violated here. For these reasons, I would ask not only that the court affirm the district court's decision denying the requested preliminary injunction, beyond that, whether it's based upon a lack of standing or lack of a protected property interest, either finding is fatal to this complaint. I would therefore ask that this court enter judgment on Appellee's behalf or direct the district court to do so. Thank you.
These landowners own their property subject to the protections of the Butler County zoning regulations, which indicate that if a commercial use comes in next door, that commercial use will have to plant a landscaping buffer, have certain parking spots, and have certain setbacks to protect the homeowner's land use. That is the substantive right that is at issue in this case. Ohio law clearly protects it under Ohio Constitution Article 1, Section 19, and it's described as well in the Willoughby Hills and Shoemaker cases because Ohio law codifies that one landowner's use and enjoyment of their property can be impacted by an adjacent landowner's use of their land. What the district court held is that this right evaporates when the procedures for asserting it somehow go awry. And that is simply wrong under 14th Amendment due process law. The Supreme Court held in Loudermill that the substantive and procedural dimensions of property law are distinct. And yet the district court collapsed these inquiries into one, holding instead that because the residents did not attend a hearing, they forfeited their substantive right. That is not what Loudermill requires. That is not what the Due Process Clause requires. I also note that the procedures that we have been talking about this morning, notice, opportunity to be heard, a zoning hearing, and a direct appeal to court, are the non-exclusive pathways for challenging zoning variances in state court. In fact, Ohio has another way for litigants to bring to the attention of the courts flaws in the granting of variances, and that is through Ohio Revised Code 303.122. That statute establishes a 2-year statute of limitations for lawsuits related to irregularities in the granting of variances. That statute of limitations is actually still open in this case. So there is still a state court remedy that the residents could be pursuing. The idea that procedure forecloses the substance of property rights in this case is simply wrong. The district court erred in denying the preliminary injunction motion on this basis, and we would ask your honors to reverse that decision. Thank you.
We appreciate the argument that all of you have given. And we'll consider the case carefully. I think this is the last argued case today.